Hello and welcome to this IT Showcase webinar. My name is Rekha Nair and I'm a Business Program Manager on the IT Showcase team. Our topic today is Windows 10 and the modern deployment options available and how we've used it internally. In fact, we'll be covering our upgrade process, how we're using the reset functionality as well as provisioning. So with me today, I have two subject matter experts, Amrinder Singh Chadda and Stefan. So Amrinder, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi. I'm a program manager working on modern deployment.
Hi, I'm Stefan. I'm a program manager working on upgrade and deployment. I've been in the deployment space for about 9 years.
Great to have both of you. Welcome once again. And before we get started, I want to remind everyone who's watching us that you can actually send us your questions. We will have some time for Q&A at the end of the presentation, but feel free to send them along the way and I will ask you throughout the presentation. We will also have this webinar on demand in a few days. So if you want to share this with your colleagues, please feel free to do so. We will also be sharing some useful links throughout the presentation. So with that, we can get started.
Thank you, Rekha. So I'll be talking about upgrade and how we've used upgrade to get Windows 10 deployed all across Microsoft. When we think about technology in the enterprise, we know that there's a lot of different aspects that we need to cover. We need to take into account corporate policy, user privacy. We also need to make sure that what we're deploying is compatible, that we can manage it, users are ready for it and can continue to be productive when we deploy it, and that the experience is not complicated or complex. Mm-hmm. So I'll be covering some key points, talking about how we as Microsoft aren't really that much different from you as other enterprises, how we've approached deploying Windows 10 via upgrade, and then also talking about some best practices and projects that we've put in place to make our deployment super successful. So we're really not that much different. A lot of times people think of Microsoft as and all monolithic, we use Microsoft products through and through, but we've acquired many different companies over the years and they bring in different environments, different aspects and applications that they use for their products. And we have to integrate them, transition and migrate them to approved products and applications on our side. And so we'll deal with things like third-party disk encryption, third-party VPN products, you know, not all of our subsidiaries or acquisitions have configuration distribution points at their sites. And so it makes it a little more difficult to get builds and applications to them, pushing them out and making sure that they're meeting our corporate standards and policies.
So one of the things, Stefan, we also do a lot of early deployment, don't we?
We do.
So that just adds to the complexity that we have.
That's right. Yeah. It does. It we're trying to stay pretty much with the engineering groups as they're deploying and getting builds out, and not just in Windows, but across all of our products like Office and Skype. And so one of the questions we ask is, clean install really the best solution for us? And so we'll walk you through our thought process of how we got to the place that clean install was not the best solution for us for all of our deployment scenarios. So as a corporate environment, we're heavily weighted towards folks connected to the corporate network, at least in terms of our full-time employees. About 3/4 of our full-time employees are in offices that are directly connected to our corporate network, whether that's through Wi-Fi or wired connections. And so they have a lot of different options for getting Windows onto their machines, right? We can do clean install through WDS. Obviously, we can also do upgrade, which we've done. Those users, you know, have really good experience, right? They're good bandwidth. And then also they have a bevy of mobile connection options, direct access VPN, for example. And they're also typically situated in sites that do have distribution points. Mm-hmm. However, about 1/4 of our company, 1/4 of our full-time employees, I should say, do work remote. And so, you know, their primary connection to the corporate environment is through direct access or VPN, or, you know, they're mostly connecting over the internet. And so they have more limited options for getting Windows builds to their machines. So some keys to our successful upgrade project. One of the big things that we did was create and cultivate early adopter community. These are people who want to be on the cutting edge of all of our products, Windows, Office, Skype, whatever it may be, and want to participate in making those products better for our end user customers. And so, we included principles of gamification, so recognition and leaderboards. There's a ton of ability for them to provide feedback to us. We leverage Yammer. We have a forum with moderators that make sure questions are being answered and filtered to the right teams. Of course, there's help desk and support for those folks. And so we really want to make sure that we're getting that feedback and capturing the experience of those early adopters to make the experience better for our broader corporate user base. And then those early adopters also are vital to validating scenarios and approaches to deployment or the usage of Windows. And so they really are a key stakeholder in making sure that our Windows 10 deployment is a success for the entire company.
And the group in the early adoption community, right? And it's across the globe. And so you get kind of getting pretty much the sample of the feedback that you would get when you have the entire company.
That is exactly correct, Rekha. It's it's not centered around Redmond, for example. I would say we probably are about 50-50 between US and the rest of the world in terms of early adopter community. We're probably close to about 20,000 people in our community there. And so, we have a great many different perspectives, mm-hmm. user scenarios, to make sure that we're not missing anything and that we're not too focused on a developer-centric or Redmond-centric experiment.
Right, personas. I mean, it's not necessarily engineering or it's not essentially a salesperson, but you're getting all of that combination.
Right. So then one of the other keys to our project was making sure that we can support our users successfully and quickly and efficiently. So part of that is it's very social. So we've moved our support to forums and Yammer for the most part. We still take phone calls and there are still walk-up kiosks for users who need that. But in general, we're leveraging being able to get help at your desk or at your laptop without having to be on the phone or walk out of your office to get the assistance you need. Then obviously users helping users. We use the early adopter community. They've been through the deployments, they've been using the products, and they can help the rest of the users get through any issues that they've already had. And of course then subject matter experts like Amrinder and I are helping out as well. And so then that becomes an early detection system for any issues that are raised, and then we can quickly remediate and resolve those things. The final key or final pillar to our successful upgrade project has been the use of what we call mission control. And these are 3 times daily meetings for about 30 minutes that include subject matter experts like myself and Amrinder, folks from our support staff, and then folks from our different locales, so the IT managers from the different regions. And we meet 3 times a day. It's all about finding out during that time period, what are the live issues? What are the live issues? What are we doing to resolve those issues? And how do we make sure that that doesn't affect the next day or the day after's deployments? That's been super effective. By having 3 times a day, we get worldwide coverage. Like you mentioned, we have a ton of different locales and perspectives. And so we want to make sure that we're not too heavily weighted towards the US or too heavily weighted towards another part of the country or part of the world, I should say. Using all of those different resources between the IT managers and the support staff, we're really able to get any issues resolved quickly and out to the necessary folks who work directly with users. And that keeps our success rate and our user satisfaction pretty high.
Right, you don't have to wait for, the time to resolution is pretty low at that point in time.
Yeah. So we're going to go to what I think is my favorite slide of like all time.
There we go.
Is our evolution of deployment from Windows 7 to now. And it's been a road that we've been going towards for a long time. You know, we first recognized back in Windows 7, you know, we thought we were pretty fast back then. We got to about 80% of our full-time employees deploying Windows 7 within a year of Windows 7's release. And that seemed pretty fast. It's pretty, you know, back then in 2009, that would have been, you know, like the world record. But it's a very complex, it was a very complex deployment. There were multiple options, multiple entry points to getting Windows 7 on the machine. There were a lot of different steps in terms of migrating user data, settings, what domain do you join, what organizational unit, all sorts of things that just, you know, almost information overload for our users. And so, and then in Windows 8, we realized that was too much. You know, we provided too much freedom, too much choice to our users. So we started to work on programs to scale that back. So we moved to using MDT with a custom solution to bring in a little bit more structure to the deployment. But it was still fairly complex. You still had to do a number of steps to get your data migrated, settings migrated onto your PC or from Windows 7 to Windows 8. And so a colleague of ours approached the Windows team and wanted to do a different sort of deployment for moving to Windows 8.1, what we call our upgrade experiment. We wanted to eliminate all the different steps and tools and get down to a couple of clicks for the user to get from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. And that was a huge success. You know, we saw our support calls drop by almost 35%. Our success rate skyrocketed to almost 95% for deployments, and the user experience was, you know, pretty simple. I think it was about two clicks, maybe three clicks for users, and no choices to make. No, do I join this domain or that organizational unit? No, do I want to no choice around migrating my apps and settings and data. It was all done for them. It's just two clicks, install, I'm ready to go, and you're on Windows 8.1.
So that's the key, I think. The shift was essentially, you know, what's the user experience,
right?
And what was that translating itself to when it came back to your teams? And so clearly that really paid off.
It did. It paid off a ton. So much that the Windows team took formal steps to improve that experience for Windows 10. And here at Microsoft IT, we were the front runners in really using that. And so the vast majority of our Windows 10 deployment has been with upgrade. We've continued the success we had with the Windows 8.1 upgrade, you know, well above 90% success rate. Our support levels are still at the same level. You know, our issues and time to resolution are very low. And so the user experience has, you know, really solidified into something that's simple. Users get it. They're ready for it. It's been a really big success for us here at Microsoft, and we're going to continue using that, you know, until something better comes along.
Right, and we are doing this in weeks.
Right. So yeah.
Started in a year. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, Windows 7 was a year. Mm-hmm. You know, to get to 80% of our FTEs. When we did our Windows 10 deployment, we got to 85% of our FTEs in 4 weeks. 90% in 9 weeks, and we've kept up that pace for the past couple of releases. So. You know, we've gone from years to just a couple of months to get Windows 10 deployed across the company, and that's been fantastic for us.
Great.
So you might be asking, well, how did we get there so fast? Did we just blast Windows 10 down to everybody's machine? Actually, we didn't, right? As you alluded to, it's really been about the user experience for us. And so, you know, we have this these two options that users can, when the deployment is ready and the upgrade is ready, they can go into Software Center and initiate the install themselves. You know, we send out an email to everyone in the company saying that Windows 10 is ready for to be used across the company, and they can go and do that on their own time. But we also wanted to make sure that we keep the company as a whole together. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our goal is to get, you know, the vast majority of our machines running with the latest version of Windows 10 within 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's been our goal for the past two releases. And so we do have a mandatory deadline for machines to get to Windows 10. And we space them out over waves, so it's, you know, roughly 10 to 20,000 PCs per wave to get there. You know, we have probably about 40 to 50% of our users do user-initiated installs, and the rest, they hit the deadline and they get upgraded, you know, during a lunchtime or after business hours, and they come back and they can log back in, they're back on Windows 10.
Right. So we do have one question that's common. Can you upgrade from 32-bit to 64-bit?
No, unfortunately you can't. That's a limitation of Windows as of right now, but that's a very common question. You can go from 32-bit to 32-bit and 64-bit to 64-bit, but there's no cross-architecture upgrade. So how do we get this great user experience? We use the System Center Configuration Manager Operating System Deployment Task Sequence. That is a mouthful.
Yeah.
So the OSD task sequence in System Center Configuration Manager 2012 R2 and in their new 1511 release has the ability to integrate with Windows setup and do upgrade deployments and not just clean install deployments. And so we use that task sequence for our Windows 10 deployments and Windows 10 upgrades. And you have the ability to do some pre-task sequence steps. And we have used that in the past to address issues or bugs and preemptively and proactively for users to help drive down those issues. And as things come up from our different support channels, we're able to implement fixes inside that task sequence, redeploy that task sequence, and future users won't run into that problem. And so that's been super helpful. You can also do post-task sequence actions, things like to clean up after the upgrade, to save off logs for investigation. And there's also an on-failure task sequence, again, to help help with the first-level triagers and investigators understand why an issue is happening. And so, you know, our recommendation, what we've done is we minimize the amount of steps we're doing. We do leverage them when we need to, but we tend to let Windows setup do the heavy lifting. So with that, I'm going to hand off to Amrinder to talk about reset and clean install.
Thanks, Stefan. So reset. I would like to set or tell you a story of the reset. And this is very important. And the reason is because reset is one of those features which you might easily overlook as a deployment option because it's so easy and convenient for the users. But it's not what you've been doing in the past. So what you've been doing in the past is doing, even for doing a refresh of the device, you've been doing, you know, MDT task sequences, you've been doing OSD task sequences, and, you know, just for refreshing or resetting the device and handing off to somebody else. So since you and your users are not used to it, I thought it was very important to tell this story to set the context. So reset is a really powerful tool, and it combines the best of all the previous restoration techniques like system restore and, you know, other reset or restore options that were available. And in Windows 10, it's so much better than what it was in Windows 8 timeframe. So we'll talk about that as well. But really, it's a really great story when it comes to somebody who wants to do a reset when they are remote or they don't have any corporate connectivity or they are in a hotel and they want to get up and running almost immediately. Reset can help you do that. So in this particular case, the user is a remote worker. So that would be your typical use case scenario. And the remote worker wants to reset the device because she may be having some issues with some application mm-hmm. or issues, you know, somebody might not be able to boot their machine. So in both those scenarios, they would do a reset. Mm-hmm. So there is a default reset experience, and then you know, you can enhance, as an IT organization, you can enhance the reset experience to do a lot more than the out of the box reset experience. So in this particular case, she goes to the update and security options and initiates a reset. She's presented with two options, which is, you know, keep their files mm-hmm. or remove everything. You would choose the option to remove everything if you were ready to hand off the device to somebody else, for example. But in this particular case, she will choose that she wants to keep her files because files are important, I guess.
Actually, I didn't think of it, but that's an important scenario, right? Because if you want to clean up your machine and you're getting a new machine, for instance, you're just cleaning it off. That's a very good option to just remove my files. And
absolutely. And it could be like a business assistant trying to like give temporary devices to somebody, and you know, they don't want to like wait for the other device to come in. Maybe that's a great scenario where this can help.
Right, and the network boot and things like
that. Yeah, you don't need to do network boot. You don't need to, like, how would you explain network boot to admin assistant, right? Saying, oh, you know, press F12 and, you know, do that. No, do a reset, give the device to somebody else so that they can log in and do their thing, right? So it's really easy and convenient, and the IT provisioning package can really make a huge difference in this case. Mm-hmm. So what happens in a typical reset is that the device would, and you don't need to be online or connected to CorpNet or connected to the internet for that matter. Mm-hmm. You could do this offline as well at your home, and you would just initiate a reset. The machine resets the OS state. So all the applications actually, they are not retained, mm-hmm. but all the user files are retained in the process. Mm-hmm. So you get into this clean state where the OS is all fresh and you know, working just right. And so this is almost like cherry picking the best of all these recovery options that we had in the past, right? And then the IT provisioning package, I tend to use the term blob because it's kind of like, looks like an Azure blob or whatever. But the IT provisioning package will be the one that will actually give you some of your apps back so that you can be productive the minute you do a reset. And reset does not take too much time as well. Mm. It only takes, you know, 15 minutes on a typical machine. On some machines, it's even faster, including the time it needs to restore some of those apps back.
Interesting. Now, does the user have to create a restore point?
No, there is no restoration point. Mm-hmm. The default out of reset functionality is configured out of the box. Mm-hmm. Even Upgrade does configure it for you. Right. And once you have that, an IT organization can actually improvise on the default out of box functionality. Mm-hmm. And the way they do that is, for example, in our case, we use SCCM to manage that particular configuration on the machine. So we take what is called, you know, it's kind of a hybrid solution with provisioning, mm-hmm. wherein you take a provisioning blob that was captured from for example, a virtual machine and apply it on the machine. And we'll mm-hmm. talk about those details a little bit later as to how you can do that. Mm-hmm. But the end result is that the device comes back on, working fine, mm-hmm. your remote connectivity software maybe is in the provisioning blob, can be restored, your office gets restored, and your SCCM client gets configured right out of the box, right? Now that's a huge win because your SCCM client is up and running right after you did a refresh. So you could install all the apps that are missing maybe from System Center or, you know, Hybrid Intune, whatever setup you have. Mm-hmm. And excellent part is that you don't have to actually go back to the corporate network to actually be able to log in, or you don't need to do VPN because your domain join information is persisted across a reset, and you are able to immediately log in with your old cache credentials that you had before you started, if you choose the option to keep my files.
Yeah, and that's so important, right? Because in the past, when you actually get a, you know, you have to redo a machine,
yeah,
all the different things you have to remember to go and install, okay, what am I missing? This is pretty much given, it looks like.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if you talk about a remote worker scenario, try explaining remote domain join to a remote worker in marketing. It's going to be like half a day worth of effort and, you know, and frustration, you know, of trying to do a remote domain join.
Right, and it goes back to those calls that you were talking about. Right.
Absolutely.
Even improving the experience just for users across the board.
Yeah.
And the beauty of reset is that doesn't matter what your workflow is, the starting point is, the end result is going to be exactly the same. So your machine is working, you go to settings and then you reset from there. If your machine is not booting and you get to these recovery options, for example, this user in this particular case could not boot the machine and they are immediately trying to go to a meeting, then they would just do a reset and then voila, everything is back. You know, same process, exactly same things are happening behind the scenes, and your IT provisioning package gets restored. You get some of your apps back. You are up and running with Office, or you know, if you're trying to give a PowerPoint presentation, you know, you are up and running immediately.
Your data is back, and so is the software, right?
Yes. So data is back as part of the default experience and software. Only the specified software that that IT organization can choose what they want in that particular portfolio or that persona will get back. So reset experience in Windows 10. Now I've given you the whole story, right? And now it's time to explain you what is the value of it, right? So when you look at reset in Windows 8, reset has been there for a long time. It's been there since Windows 8 timeframe. But at that point in time, you needed a separate partition where you had your install Vim. And if you wanted to add any application, you could not do that to that Vim. You could you had to service or you know replace the entire Vim, and you had to service the drivers, and you had to do all sorts of, like, it was like a you know, like a big dish that you had to cook, and it took like, you know, a couple of hours, I would say, to cook it, right? So basically the promise with Windows 10 is, you know, it's easy to configure, right? Because there is no need to have a separate partition, so you save on space. You have the reset configuration right on your system volume, right? And the IT configuration or the provisioning blob can also sit on the volume, on the C drive. So your scripting is very easy. You don't have to like unhide the partition and do some magic with it, right? Everything is straightforward. Your scripting is very straightforward. You can update the blob as you choose, right? And then you will start getting new apps back on the machine next time somebody does a reset. And then it chooses or it uses the exact OS state from a couple of time, you know, some time ago. And then the operating system gets back to a healthy and running state. All the updates also, you get all some of the roll-up updates back, and it's like a super productive and secure desktop. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm trying to say right out of the box when you do a reset. And then you know, the process is really fast, right? And you get the apps installed back as well, super fast, and you know, it does not really add up to too much to the time of doing a reset. The serviceability, the maintenance of the process is very easy. You can do SCCM updates of your blob out of band with, you know, you don't need to, like, you know, update Vims like we did in the past. And this opens up a lot of opportunities, other opportunities, right?
So question for you. So and doing this behind the scenes, so it's the one you were talking about, the user experience itself, but as an IT person, what does it take to keep up the blob? How do you make the decision in terms of when to update?
Yes. So in our case, for example, I think we are a very good case study because we have automation in place for creating our images, for example. So what effort you spent in creating your images can actually be leveraged directly to create a reset blob as well, right? So in our case, we use our automation and we stop it, like, or not really stop it, like we have a MDT task sequence to create our base image. We use the same exact process, and right in the middle of that particular process, we actually capture the provisioning blob, right? So it kind of uses our existing processes, and then we extract that provisioning package, and then we dump it to our SCCM system to actually deploy it to all the machines, right? So it's reusing some of the things that we already built in the past, and the processes that you could we'll explain a little bit more detail as we move along, but the process is very straightforward, and you know it can be maintained and updated at monthly cadences, quarterly cadences, whatever you choose to, on how often you want to update your provisioning blob, for example.
And upgrade, if you choose to use upgrade for your deployment, doesn't stop all over.
Absolutely.
That reset
experience. Yes. And then there are so many options that you could be really creative with it. I know there are companies out there who are deploying like different set of software for different users. So since we are using SCCM in this particular case to update the blob, you could create machine collection, you could create user collection, which get a kind of a different blob, and you could create different personas, like you have your developer persona, your marketing persona, your data scientist persona, whatever the case may be, that will get that extra set of apps. And then the next time that person resets, depending on what their persona is, they will get all the marketing apps back.
Right, and so it's very personalized.
Absolutely.
At this point in time.
You could be very creative with this thing. Mm-hmm. So now that we know what value reset brings on the table, I'll just tell you what tools and techniques you need to use, so that you have a sort of a springboard to take this journey forward. So the tools that you need. So you need your ADK. The step on the right, on the left hand side, starts on the admin machine, which has ADK installed. So USMT, as you know, can be sort of copied and pasted, and it can run standalone. So this process on the left hand side extracts USMT and all the needed manifests that are needed for doing a reset data package creation. You would take it on a USB stick, for example, or you can actually copy and paste it onto the virtual machine or a physical machine that you've set up for capturing the applications from. So it's really like capturing all the applications and their corresponding settings maybe from that particular machine, and then pasting it on different machines. It's like copy and paste.
Like a snapshot.
Yes,
a snapshot
kind of like. The admin pretty much configures the device just the way they want it, all the apps. And then they use this particular command line, which is mentioned over there, which is simply scan state. People who are who know deployment know scan state. Basically, to capture all the apps from the machine, there are certain exclusions you need to make for certain things which might cause your reset experience to get into some trouble. But if you have those exclusions in place, then what you get out of this particular process is a highly compressed package, provisioning package, which contains all the apps, some of the settings, and then drivers, if you choose to include drivers. We don't use the slash driver switch because we don't need to extract, because we are doing this on a virtual machine. But if you extract the drivers as well, that makes a package larger and might cause some drivers of that machine to be installed on the other machine, which we don't really want.
Right, and so you're getting the bare minimum, but you're getting the most optimal
the most
in there.
Yes. Yeah. And then when you take this particular package as the output of this particular process, you dump it into your SCCM deployment. We have created like a PowerShell wrapper, which just copies this from the SCCM server onto the machine, and then configures the machine with this particular configuration.
So every machine that's gone through an upgrade, they get this provisioning package now?
So every machine that has gone through upgrade gets the default reset configured, mm-hmm. and then which we supplement with this particular provisioning package, mm-hmm. which allows to get the apps back.
All right, and so that's how it's deployed today.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So some of the lessons learned with this, make sure that you don't include Configuration Manager client in it, mm-hmm. because the reset process also restores some aspects of the Configuration Manager client. That's how it gets it, the Configuration Manager client up and running, mm-hmm. on the machine. So having a Configuration Manager client captured in the provisioning package causes a kind of a conflict, mm-hmm. on the machine, and might cause some WMI corruption. And then when the, like this is a lesson learned because we were using it this way, is that when you have something like MDT or something to create your blob, or like our imaging process, and we are creating the blob within the imaging process, we have auto logon settings configured on the machine, which if they are captured on the package, then what happens is that when the package gets restored, the refresh process works fine, but the reset process fails because reset process kind of inherits those keys from the provisioning package, mm-hmm. and goes into this reboot loop. So that's something that you need to take care of. There are certain set of Windows components, and you know, we'll have those posted in the slide, mm-hmm. For later, that you should exclude. And then you should exclude drivers from the creation process because drivers unnecessarily add to the package. And then configuration of maintenance of the process can be done through SCCM, so it's only covering managed machines. And then make sure that, for example, Surface devices come with their own provisioning packages if you bought them off from the shelf. And there are newer devices coming with provisioning packages. So make sure that if you are using an off-the-shelf devices and customizing and using ICD or some other provisioning solution, then there will be another provisioning blob that you need to take care of when you're otherwise having two blobs or two provisioning packages, which restore apps can cause the refresh process to fail.
Now, is that something that you would hand off to your customer, or I'm sorry, the support and help desk teams and say, hey, these are the things to watch out?
No, in our case, we use our scripting solution itself, which looks at a machine,
okay.
finds out, oh, there is another existing provisioning package. Maybe I should not touch this machine. Mm-hmm. You can be creative. Either you want to like remove all those provisioning packages and create your own configuration, or you want to retain the existing information and, okay. and go as is. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've chosen. Like we chose not to touch those packages and just quit the, because it's already configured.
Okay.
Now we'll talk about provisioning, and provisioning is a engine which drives a lot of these experiences. As you saw, reset was using provisioning packages. Mm-hmm. Provisioning has its, you know, runtime provisioning, and there is like image time provisioning, and a lot of the stuff that you do with ICD, the Image Configuration Designer, which is our tool for creating clean install and media and all that in Windows 10. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to not like go deep dive into ICD and what it does, because that's not our focus, but to actually explain where and how ICD can be used in different deployment scenarios.
Actually, there's a question just on imaging at this point in time, right? Can you explain just creating images for deployment and multiple languages? Of course, we probably did a multi-language upgrade and installation. What was that experience?
Yes, so for upgrade in our particular case, we have five languages that we support, mm-hmm. And all those five languages need to have exclusive set of sources. That's the gotcha for upgrade. For clean install, if you are using MDT or OST, by default, the way the multiple languages are supported in these two technologies is you have the base image, which is English version, and then you have your language packs, which actually get injected offline onto the particular English version of the OS. And to be honest, like the OS is sort of Unicode in its own sense, so it inherits all the features of the language packs. So you get, you know, English, French, whatever your supported language is after you do language pack injection.
I would say, you know, if we could go back in time and redo some of our like Windows 7 or Windows 8 deployments, that in order to help make our upgrades easier, that we would standardize on a single language and then manage with just language packs for those users who are in different regions of the world and they need a specific language. Yeah. So, you know, my recommendation would be to standardize your base OS language on a single language and then manage language packs as necessary. And that would make your upgrade, if you choose to use upgrade, that would make your upgrade process a lot easier, and you won't have to have, you know, five different sources for five different languages.
Right, and it also keeps it leaner.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And so what I'm trying to do here is trying to quantify what the typical provisioning scenarios or where you will use ICD and runtime provisioning and image time provisioning. So if you're trying to create some provisioning package for phones, for example, then you could use, there are various options, and you could be an OEM, you could be a small enterprise with less than 200 devices. And I've chosen that very specifically because that's the key differentiator where you need to use and how you should be using it. Then you, if you're a large enterprise, but all of them, if they're trying to do phone provisioning, for example, then you would actually be using USB tether mechanism, or you would be using SD card, or you would be using a cool new feature called NFC tap and share. So you could actually have the provisioning package on a NFC device and just tap, and that get device will get provisioned. On the company standard devices, for example, if you are an OEM and shipping the devices to an enterprise, you could use ICD and provisioning tools to be able to customize that particular image for a specific order, but still continue with your imaging solutions for now. And you know, the provisioning story is evolving and we don't know what's going to happen next. And then if you are a small enterprise with less than 200 devices to provision, you would use the same method. But if you are a large enterprise, you will still continue using your MDT and OSD task sequences to deliver the images. And then CYOD and BYOD, I've like try to club them, those categories together, because I think they technically are exactly the same. But if you are a small enterprise and then you are trying to use runtime provisioning, you would be using like an off-the-shelf device with the recommendation is to use signature editions of OSs, which do not have too much OEM pre-installed software. So you would take those devices and then apply your provisioning package, which will configure maybe bulk MDM bulk enrollment and you know, SKU upgrades. So you're moving from pro SKU to enterprise SKU, so that they can get DA and other functionality. And the same goes for a large enterprise, which was trying to get a CYOD kind of off-the-shelf device with signature edition. Let me be very specific, signature editions and trying to do that. If you move, yes. So clean install. Now, the clean install process, where do we still need the IT image, IT standard image. Mm-hmm. Most of your machines will be moving to Windows 10 using upgrade. And there will be some scenarios where still, you know, there are new devices which are on standards coming, you know, through the factory, and then you will still be using your existing methods of imaging, which is SCCM, MDT, LTI. So in this particular case, we are just trying to explain the structure of our IT image, what it means, and you know, it's nothing new. It's what you've been using for all your deployments in the past. Mm-hmm. But you know, please upgrade.
Upgrade. And Cletus, you know, the question earlier was, can you upgrade from 32-bit to 64-bit? And we can't. And so clean install would be the way you would migrate from a 32-bit OS to 64-bit OS.
Right. So the old options are still available, but we're seeing how, just us using it, we're using the upgrade for the most part. And then these are still available just in case. And it looks like to restore your machine is just reset the machine.
Absolutely.
And makes it much easier.
Yes. Yeah. And we've seen that from even our statistics and data that we gather, most of the people, they keep on, like, if they have like a test device, especially in Microsoft, they keep on resetting their device and reimaging it just to do a reset. Well, you know, new ways, new techniques, and we are pushing them to start using reset as their primary way, because it's so much easier than, you know, going to WDS or SCCM server to actually do an install.
Yeah, it's a better user experience.
Yes.
And it's less work on a corporate infrastructure, right? We're not pushing down a multi-gigabyte package to just reinstall the OS when, you know, that
everything
capability
is
already
there.
Right there.
Yes.
Right, and it'll be just fantastic when you have this persona-based as well, right? So it becomes very personalized. It's what I'm looking for versus just getting this bare OS and then start all over again.
Absolutely.
All right.
So I think we're at the end.
All right. So with that, we have a few questions. So before we get to the questions, though, I do want to remind everybody, we'll just post a link for a quick feedback. So please do take a moment to grab that link, give us feedback, let us know what you think, and continue to post your questions. And we will take just a moment, give them a minute to grab the link, and we will look at the questions. All right. So, with that, before we go to the questions, I have a few of them here. Just talk about your team, right? Do you have, are you all located over here, geolocated?
Yeah, so my team, and we do a lot of reset and provisioning work. We have, I have like two resources here and two resources in an offshore location.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it.
That's your team, huh? So it looks like, yes, you do have both located here as well as.
And then from program management perspective, there's a
ton of program managers. You know, Emran and I are not the only ones that work on deployment. Most of us are here in Redmond, but we work extensively with the product group and with the IT managers across the globe. And the support folks across the globe. And so, you know, we are truly a worldwide team. And it's, you know, we can't get this deployment done. We can't get Windows 10 on all of the Microsoft devices without their help.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll quickly go to the questions here. First one, I think probably Stefan, this is for you. Is it better to update applications before or after the upgrade?
So I think it depends. The biggest thing is the updated version of the application supported on your currently running version of Windows?
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, then I would recommend updating your applications beforehand. Mm-hmm. Upgrade is going to handle migrating your applications as long as they're compatible with Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
The reason to upgrade them before is that if the upgrade fails, the upgrade rolls back, then the user still has that new version of the application, even if they're on the older version of the OS. And so they're, you know, presumably there's a better user experience, they're more productive with that application. So I recommend, as long as that program is compatible and works well on Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, to upgrade it or to update it beforehand before doing the Windows upgrade.
Right, and then that's essentially like as you said, so when you roll back,
right,
you have a machine that's still working.
Still working.
All right, so are there any best practices to share on how the reset feature is being used? And I think you addressed that a little bit right now in terms of how are we using it internally? What are we seeing?
Yes, so we have deployed the reset feature to roughly around 300,000 clients, mm-hmm. All in the managed space. Mm-hmm. And we have seen very high success rates when it comes to reset, because you don't have to, IT doesn't have to manage how reset is done. That's part of reset's own work. But what IT manages is the end user experience. Mm-hmm. That's what we are in the business of, managing the end user experience, right? You do take all the heavy lifting and give it to reset to do, you know, manage reset. And it does its job really, really well. Mm-hmm. There are very high success rates. We know this because we are the people who do a lot of telemetry, mm-hmm. out of those things. So, we have a lot of best practices, and we will share as with this particular deck as to what those best practices are in a little bit. And then, you know, maybe you and I should work on creating a sort of a document that we can share.
Yeah, something that we can do publicly. Yes. That's a good point. Another question. Mm-hmm. How much compatibility testing is done when preparing for Windows 10?
So that's a great question. You know, we probably have about over 2,000 line of business applications, you know, here at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And it would take a very long time to test them all. That was part of why our Windows 7 deployment took a long time. We tested nearly every single one of those. With the Windows 10 upgrade, we took a different approach. We put the applications into different categories, mm-hmm. And we tested a subset or representative samples from those application categories. And if, you know, those tested well, and as well as our sites, our websites, of course, being compatible. If those tested well, you know, we basically checked off that group. And so we went down from testing over 2,000 line of business applications to about 200. So we test about 10% of our sites and apps. And you know, our ultimate goal, our ideal goal is to get down to zero.
Right.
But that's where we went.
So just tying those two points, right? You said about how long it took in the past, you know, just for the upgrade as well as all of this play such a big part, right? It's not just, you know, when you're looking at the full deployment, you're looking at, okay, what's my environment going to look like before and after?
Right.
And all those considerations. And so we've had to reimagine even the app compat testing process.
We have, you know, it's a very good point. It's not just the physical deployment takes a long time, but everything leading up to it, from compatibility testing to image creation,
right,
the reset or refresh image creation, or being able to restore, making sure we have the right user guides, mm-hmm. For users, all those things, you know, add to the amount of time it takes to deploy an OS. And as things become more simple, whether it's from a refresh or from an upgrade perspective, there's less guides to be written, less testing for compatibility, less work, lead up work, preparation work done on the IT organization. You know, that allows us to be more efficient, to deploy faster. We go from years to weeks, mm-hmm. and we can put our focus on other things and other projects that enable the company to be productive.
And I want to put this point down that you are not alone in this journey. Microsoft does a lot of compatibility testing, mm-hmm. for a lot of apps, and the upgrade engine pretty much becomes more intelligent as moves forward, because it takes all those learnings and it knows how to shim those apps, how to make them compatible with Windows 10, and in the process of, you know, migrating. So a lot of heavy lifting is being done by Microsoft. When it comes to your line of business apps, that's the only portfolio that you will really have to look at. Your line of business app, you need to quantify, and then you need to separate them into these buckets of what is a desktop app, what is an IE app, and then, you know, there are ton of advancements as far as compatibility is concerned in Windows 10 with IE, you know, with EMI mode, with the CV listing and enterprise mode and stuff like that. That's really, you know, making it very easy. And this is part of our journey, and we had to do this because we were giving this feedback that, hey, it's still difficult, get us there, and they have been doing their work in getting us there. And it's a constant process of evolving, right? Windows is like a service now and constantly evolving.
That's a great point, Amrinder.
Right. So we're almost running out of time here. So one last question we will take right here is, how do you prepare help desk for a deployment? And I think you mentioned that a little bit in terms of even just the mission control is what you call.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the self-help that users are giving each other. But then at scale, at one point in time, you really have to have everything in place.
So, you know, really, we bring the support organization along our journey with us as from the very first piloting phase of the deployment through introducing it to our early adoption community, as well as I mentioned, they're part of our mission control. You know, we bring the support folks, the support organization along with us. They're included in our planning meetings. You know, the lead up to the actual deployment, they're heavily involved. They're in all of the decision-making processes there. And so that really helps make sure that that organization is ready for the deployment. They're more ready for the deployment than our users, and that's important.
Right.
So we really bring them along with us.
And it ties into what you were saying, because a lot of the feedback that comes from there ties into how we add the feedback back into our processes as well.
Yes.
So. All right, so I do want to be respectful of everyone's time here. So with that, thank you so much.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
We learned a lot today. Thank you everyone who joined us. And once again, you will have this webinar available to you in a few days on demand. So please feel free to watch sections that you want to watch again or share it with your colleagues. And with that, we will see you next time. So thank you.
Thank you.